Answers from attorneys on Ask the Expert are not substitutes for the advice of an attorney. Ask the Expert is a public forum, and questions and responses are not private or confidential or protected by the attorney-client privilege. Attorney is not your attorney, and any statement by attorney is not legal advice. You should not understand any statement in response to any question to propose specific action or address specific circumstances, but only to give you a sense of general principles of law that might affect the situation you describe. Application of these general principles to particular circumstances must be done by a lawyer who has spoken with you in confidence, learned all relevant information, and explored various options. Before acting on these general principles, you should hire a lawyer licensed to practice law in the jurisdiction to which your question pertains. Many legal matters are time-sensitive. You should act without delay in order to protect your rights and interests. By answering questions, attorneys do not form attorney-client relationships with callers.
The following Ask the Expert show is a paid advertisement provided by Aronson & Moss Law Firm, and airing of the program is not to be considered endorsement or recommendation. The opinions expressed are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of WMT or Clear Channel Media and Entertainment.
Welcome to Ask the Expert on 600 WMT. I'm Jim Doyne, along with Jim Reddick. Jim Reddick is an attorney with the Aronson & Moss Law Firm. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jim. I'm doing fine.
Well, good to have you here today. Most of the attorneys that I've talked to always have an area they like to work in, and what would be that for you?
Well, today I'm here to talk about bankruptcy. That's one of the areas that I work in at the firm that's different from everybody else. Those who've listened here before the last couple weeks know that I also do some estate planning work, probate, and we have attorneys at our firm who also do business law and family law and criminal law.
Now, in bankruptcy, there are several things you can do. There's, as you say, Chapter 7, Chapter 13. Are there any other chapters that we need to know about?
There are other chapters in the bankruptcy code, Jim. You start out with Chapter 7, then there's a Chapter 9, a Chapter 11, a Chapter 12, and a Chapter 13. Those are for people in the United States, and then there's a Chapter 15 for multinational things. I'm dealing with individuals, mm-hmm. you know, and so individuals are going to be looking at either a Chapter 7 or a Chapter 13. Some individuals will do a Chapter 11 if they have a very complex financial situation, maybe involve a lot of businesses, very high dollar that they wouldn't qualify for a Chapter 13. At this point in time, I've decided I'm not really looking to work with those people on those things. Chapter 11s are a lot more complex. It's something where you want to have a real good staff with you, and we're not doing that right now. So it's the individual, whether they're young and just getting started and made some bad mistakes, or whether they're, you know, I've got some clients who are retired.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody calls you, they're not going to say, I want to file a Chapter 7 or Chapter 3. Probably don't know. They just want to, file a bankruptcy. Isn't that what you usually hear?
That's usually what we hear. And it's important for people to know that there is a difference between Chapter 7 and Chapter 13. Chapter 7 is one that's sometimes called a liquidation. The idea is that you will go into court, disclose everything that you have, and tell the court, I'm willing to give up any property that I have that the law says I can't keep, so that the trustee, the bankruptcy trustee, can take that, liquidate it, and use whatever money they get, the proceeds, to pay off the creditors on an equal basis. Now, a lot of times, probably most times, I don't know exact statistic there, but most of the time, there are what we call no asset cases. The bankruptcy trustee doesn't have anything to take and liquidate. So in effect, then, the people who file for a Chapter 7 have been able to keep just about everything that they have, and then they get a discharge of all the dischargeable debts rather quickly, within, you know, about 120 days or so of when they file.
So then their creditors can't come back at them at all, is that right?
That is correct.
Well, what can they keep on a Chapter 7?
Well, in a Chapter 7, you get, you can keep the same thing in a Chapter 13. You know, to be honest, what you can keep is set by what we call the Iowa exemption laws. Mm-hmm. There's one specific statute that sets it all up, and these are things that apply whether or not you file for bankruptcy. So if you had a judgment against you and somebody wanted to try to come and collect, for example, your home, your homestead is exempt. Vehicles are exempt. There's a whole list of things based on that statute. There are other things in different places in the Iowa Code, and then there are even some federal exemption laws, you know, IRAs and pension plan interests are things that are generally speaking exempt. But, you know, really what we need to do is find, before we talk about that, we need to figure out, are these people going to be qualified?
Now, what do you mean qualified?
Qualified, yeah. And let me go back just a second, because I talked about Chapter 7 and how most people get to keep just about everything and they get a quick discharge. Chapter 13 is a little bit different. It's not a liquidation. You say, I'm going to, for the next 3 years or 5 years, commit all of my disposable income and pay it to a person who's called the Chapter 13 trustee, who will then pay those funds to my creditors. And you can make what's called a plan. You have to have a plan to tell the trustee how those payments are supposed to go. It's something that people look at if they have a more complex situation. They may have some debts that otherwise wouldn't be dischargeable, or they may want to, say, for example, try to catch up some arrears on the mortgage payment. You know, that's one thing you can do in a Chapter 13 that you don't have any right to do in a Chapter 7 is make catch-up payments.
Well, are the creditors always just willing to go ahead and accept this with no problem at all?
Well, they don't really have much choice.
Bankruptcy
law says if you file for bankruptcy, everybody has to stop trying to collect right there. That's called the automatic stay. There are obviously some exceptions to that. If there's some sort of criminal investigation going on about fraud or a prosecution for a fraud, you know, that's kind of related to debt things, but criminal things can continue to go ahead, and there are other exceptions. And from time to time, the creditors can go into court and ask the judge to say, you know, release this automatic stay with respect to me so that I can go and usually go to state court and take some action to try and get collateral that they have.
What do you mean by means test? In other words, if you're going to file, and how does it affect either 7 or Chapter 13?
That's a great question. The means test is what some people may have heard about. It's a way to determine what you qualify for. This goes back to 2006 when Congress changed the bankruptcy law. Before that, there was no means test. People would, in consultation with their lawyer, decide whether or not they wanted to file a Chapter 7 or Chapter 13. Congress thought, well, we think there's too many people filing Chapter 7s. It's too easy. They get to keep too much. We think the bankruptcy system is being abused, so we're going to set some standards. And only the people who can actually afford to pay something to their creditors are going to be required to pay for it. We're going to say they can't file for Chapter 7. They have to file for a Chapter 13. So if somebody calls me and says, I want to file a Chapter 7, you know, can I come in and talk to you? I would tell them, yeah, we'll set an appointment for you, but I don't know until we sit down and discuss it whether or not you'll be able to file that 7. And that's where the mean test comes in.
Interesting. So it's just not a matter of I want to liquidate, file bankruptcy, and start over. You can't just do that, right?
No. You have to look through it and see. Now, what Congress did in the means test is they said, we're going to look at what the median income is in each state. And if your family unit has an income for the last, it's based on the last 6 months, mm-hmm. that is at or below that median income, mm-hmm. then you've passed the means test. You can file for Chapter 7 if you want to, and there's no problem. If you get over that number, then you're looking at potentially having to file in a Chapter 13, which means instead of being done in, like I said, 120 days or so after your file, you're looking at 3 years of your life, or more likely 5 years. More likely 5 years where you have this plan, because Congress, part of the means test involves looking at how much can you pay your creditors back over 5 years.
Interesting. In your opinion, is it better to file Chapter 7 or 13, or it just depends on your personal circumstances?
It definitely depends upon your personal circumstances. There are times when, for tactical reasons, a Chapter 13 is better. As I mentioned earlier, if you are in your home and you've fallen behind in payments and you want to get them caught up, that's a reason to file for a Chapter 13. If you've got two or three mortgages on your house, Chapter 13 might give you some benefits.
Interesting. We're going to talk more about this. We're going to take a quick break. But before we do that, let's talk about the Aronson & Moss Law Firm. You are a part of that, of course. And can you tell me a little bit about that and how to get a hold of you?
Yes, I am. There are actually five attorneys there at the law firm. And we're located downtown Cedar Rapids, 425 2nd Street Southeast. It's right next to the bus station downtown. The phone number for us is 319-363-8199, and we have a firm website, which is www.aronsonlaw.com. That's AronsonLaw.com.
Very good. Jim Raddick, my guest this morning, an attorney with the Aronson & Moss Law Firm. We'll talk more with him in just a moment. This is 600 WMT. Welcome back to Ask the Expert. Jim Doyne, along with Jim Raddick, who is an attorney with the Aronson & Moss Law Firm here in Cedar Rapids, and we're talking about bankruptcy. Jim, we're talking about two specific types of bankruptcy, basically, aren't we? Chapter 7 and Chapter 13.
That's right. We're talking about Chapter 7, which is the liquidation or the one that allows people to get a quick discharge and be done with it. Chapter 13 is a reorganization or a payment plan where you're on the hook for staying with the bankruptcy court and the trustee for 3 years or 5 years.
Now let's talk about the income and how this affects. Now, I suppose on Chapter 7, I would think, well, you're just liquidating. You don't worry about income as much as you do on 13.
Right. Well, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier for the means test. To determine whether or not you qualify for Chapter 7, the first thing you look at is what is your income. And as I mentioned, it's based upon the last 6 months. It's not what it was the last year. It's not what it was the last 3 months. You look at 6 months, so it's very specific. And if you are above that median income level that I mentioned to you.
Now, what that again is?
Well, here in Iowa, that median income is $42,346. Hmm. That's for just one individual.
Mm-hmm.
It looks at, and the mean test looks at how many people are living in what they call your household.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have two people in your household, the number goes up to 58,000. Three people, it's 64,000. If you've got four people in your home, like mom and dad and two kids, then it's 76,000.
So that's your median income.
That's the median income.
Which means?
Which means if you are underneath that, if your family income is underneath that, your household income is underneath that, then you don't have to worry about doing any other calculations or showing the court about that. You're okay to file Chapter 7 if you want to.
Okay. All right. Interesting. You have to. That's why we need you, Jim.
It is very complex. It's, you know, there's so many factors because there's the issue about who's in your household. How do you count that? And then you have to look at after your income is counted up, and if you're over that median, then you say, well, there's an expense test. You look at your expenses, and Congress has said there's certain expenses that we're going to count that we realize you're going to have to pay no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of the test is you're supposed to take those expenses and subtract them from the income that you've reported for the last 6 months, and then look at how much is left over. And then if there's enough left over so that, for example, you could take that amount and over 5 years use it to pay more than 25% of your debt, if that's the case, well then Chapter 7 is a no-go for you. You get to go to Chapter 13.
Well, do you find in working with these that most people qualify for the Chapter 7? Because $72,000 sounds like a lot of money if, you know, in a family of four, for example. So how many people are actually going to be over that?
Yeah, there's a very good percentage of people here in Iowa who want to file for Chapter 7 and are going to qualify.
Mm-hmm.
Because of those numbers. What gets more problematic is if you have a family with just one or two people, probably, because those numbers are lower.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a two-income family, that, you know, that can get you up near those numbers fairly easily.
Mm-hmm. So if it takes into account both husband and wife working then or something like
right,
that.
Right, right. That's an interesting thing, too, and it makes it complex. People will come in, they'll say, well, we think maybe we want to file for bankruptcy. If you're married, you don't have to file both. It's possible that just one person wants to file. So that's one of the things that I sit down and talk with people and try and figure out what's going on. The most recent case I filed, originally the people came in and said, you know, we think we should file together. And I was going through and looking and set it up that way. And at the end of the day, decided, no, that doesn't make sense. Just, you know, just the husband's going to file. And that worked out. But even though just the husband filing, for the means test purposes, you have to look at everybody in the family who's bringing in income. Mm-hmm. So that includes your wife or your husband, you know, if it's not you. And the other thing that makes it complex, too, is it's not just income necessarily. If you have somebody else, you know, there are some families will have a family member living with them, a brother or sister or a grown child or something like that. If you're living there, you ought to be pitching in, right?
Oh, you'd think so.
You hope so. All right. Well, if they're pitching in on a regular basis, that is considered income for the means test purpose. So, you know, if you've got like a husband and wife who are looking at it and they've got a 21-year-old child who's living with them and working part-time and paying rent each month, their two incomes together might be underneath that. But if you add in that monthly rent, might put them over.
Interesting. Is it ever easy? If you have an example of something that's really...
Sometimes it's easy. I talked to some people last night, and it was easy. You know, they've got two kids. Mm-hmm. There's four of them. Their income was under $60,000. Okay. Yeah, that's going to be easy for them. That part of it, the means test, at the end of the day or the end of the evening when I sent them home, I said, I'm not necessarily recommending for you. You've got certain problems, and there may be a different way for you to handle that. I think you should explore that first. And if you're not satisfied with that, then come on back. I'd be happy to help you. Go ahead and file.
In all of your experience when you're working with these folks, is bankruptcy the last resort?
It really, in almost every case, ought to be. Mm-hmm. It really ought to be. And I've had people come in who have a lot of debt and very little income, and they're very stressed. But when I look at their total picture, they may be what we call judgment proof. In other words, there are people trying to collect from them, but if they filed a lawsuit and they got a judgment, the creditor couldn't do anything with that judgment because all these people have is exempt income or exempt assets. Mm-hmm. There's no way for the creditors to get to them. So in that case, all bankruptcy would be doing for them is buying some peace of mind, stopping the phone from ringing.
I see. So do you recommend it then, or do you say you don't need to do anything at all?
Well, I leave that up to them. I tell them you don't need to do that. I tell them you can pay me to do that, and that will, you know, perhaps give you some relief from the phone calls, and some people will do that. Depends how many phone calls they have and whether or not they think they can pay me. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, when we're dealing with people who are looking at bankruptcy, most of them don't have very much money. Mm-hmm. And the decision to file is a significant one because, you know, I can't work for free. I don't want to be in bankruptcy myself. I want to have something to provide for my wife and kids.
How long then? I know we're just about out of time, but how long then they have to live with that before maybe they can go back and maybe buy something again?
Yeah, a bankruptcy is going to stay on your credit report for 7 to 8 years, but depending upon what kind of mortgage you're looking for, et cetera, other credit, you might be able to get that within 2 or 3.
I see. Jim Raddick, my guest this morning, Aronson & Moss Law Firm. Jim, can you tell them your phone number and how they would reach you?
Absolutely. The phone number for Aronson & Moss is 319-363-8199. We have a website. It's www.aronsonlaw.com, and you can send an email to us through there, too, if you'd wish.
Very good. Jim, thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me.
And we'll see you again soon.
All right. I look forward to it, Jim.
Thanks.